Welcome back to another episode of the Battleborn Duckers. Today we're here with Josh. So we met Josh on a hunt. My boy Cody and I went out on a hunt on a Friday, and Josh can be with us today and kind of met Josh and talked a little bit about, he asked us how we did on the way out of the blind, and I'm like, well, we got a limit plus, and I asked him how he did, and so he asked for a little bit of help identifying some ducks, and so that turned into kind of us being able to take Josh out and give him an experience that hopefully he enjoyed. You got to go out with Ron and I.
I don't know how enjoyable it was, man.
Josh, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and kind of what you do and how we met and kind of the experience, how it started.
I love hunting. Kids love hunting. And duck hunting was kind of the one missing part that I haven't had. Been shown anything, taught anything, was just jumping in there trying to get my feet wet, and we come across you guys, and you guys helped us out, taught us quite a bit.
No, Josh is awesome. So when I was talking to Brian, I was like, we need to find somebody to bring onto the show that's a perfect example of who you want to bring hunting with you.
Absolutely.
And like when we brought, I think Brian made an understatement when Brian was literally walking on the blind, and Josh comes out and goes, hey, can you help me out just 1 second? And like but Josh is so humble that he came out and asked Brian for help. Brian helped him, and Brian was telling me about this weirdo he met out of Overton. And I said, you know what? We're going out tomorrow. We got an empty spot on the boat. Why don't you see if he wants to come?
So what was the text message I sent you, Josh?
You want to do something stupid.
So Josh is like, what do you mean by doing something stupid? I'm like, well, we're going to leave at like 1 o'clock in the morning. We're going to drive 3 hours. We're going to go hunt. And so little did Josh know. What the statement, hey, do you want to do something stupid, really meant.
You didn't even tell him how the weather was going to be. How was it that day, Josh?
We saw all seasons.
So this particular hunt, so we get out, and like I said, we left at like 1 o'clock in the morning, drove up there. We got out there. Dude, I'm thinking this is going to be a beautiful day. It's 52 degrees outside. Not windy. I mean, this will be great. We'll get the boat out. We'll launch it. We'll have a good day.
There was no clouds when we got out there.
Oh, dark.
I guess we couldn't see anything anyway.
Just beautiful when we got there. Just beautiful. I'm thinking bluebird day. Okay, maybe the ducks aren't going to fly as heavy as we'd like, but it'll be a good day to be out on the boat. Well, then, fast forward till shooting light, and now all of a sudden, we got driving rain, which turned into hail.
Man, that hail was so bad, you couldn't even look for ducks because the ice was going into your eyeballs.
Which then turned into sleet, which, okay, so sleet and fog, so you can't see the ducks coming. I think we got a couple ducks early, if I remember right. We got a one or two early.
Yeah.
And then the fog moved in, so you can't see any ducks coming in, and none of the ducks were coming close to us at that point. Then, all of a sudden, we decided to move, and like, Moses part of the sea, the sky is open up. This beautiful bluebird day, and it started snowing. So now the sun's out and it's snowing. By the time we got back to the boat ramp that afternoon, it was now 39 degrees. So, on top of it, we had 60 mile an hour winds out on the water, you know, and, you know, Josh is a new hunter.
Well, he's new to duck hunting.
He's new to duck hunting. He's hunted in the past, but he doesn't have the gear to go duck hunting. You know, he didn't have waders and stuff. We're like, don't worry about it. We got some waders for you.
Yeah, we got some hand-me-downs for you, Josh.
And honestly, Josh, it really wasn't a trick. So Ron had, he got these waders.
They're size 13.
They're size 13. You can wear them. Well, the size 13 was great until about halfway through the day, Josh looks at us and goes, so these waders leak. My waders are full of water.
I was like, when did that start, man? Like, you didn't tell me the whole day until we were almost back to the boat ramp. When did it start leaking?
First thing.
So he toughed it out. I mean, that was a challenging hunt all the way around. You know, Josh was a good sport about it. He was humble. I think he enjoyed the hunt. I hope he enjoyed the hunt. But
it was awesome.
There was no complaining. Josh went in the water once, got wet. you know, didn't complain about being wet.
Oh man, we gotta tell him. This is one of my favorite stories because like every single person, if you ever go out with us, just expected fall in for some reason. I don't know. Every single person we brought out with us is falling in if they have waders on. And I'm sitting next to Josh and I'm throwing out decoys. I think it was snowing at this point. We're picking up some decoys because our set was too full. And I just look over at Josh and he starts just tipping like a tree. And it wasn't a fast tip. It was just a nice, slow tip right into the water.
And we've all, if you've been a duck hunter any length of time, you've had the slow fall. You hit a, you get across the root or something, and it's, there's nothing you can do to stop yourself. You're going in the water, and everybody else around you is going to watch you go in the water and get a little bit of, a little bit wet.
Did you have, oh, we have Josh's daughter here, my daughter here. Did you have something you wanted to chime in with?
So how cold was the water?
Really cold.
But it was pretty cold. It gets a little bit chilly up there.
When we got out there that morning, we had to break through ice to get the boat in.
Yeah. So that was Mary Beth. That's Josh's daughter, and then we've got Avi here. So that's Ron's daughter. So we got them on the podcast today as well with us.
Just and Avi, you've been duck hunting before, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And Mary Beth, have you been before?
Yes.
She was with her dad in the blind when we went that day.
Are you gonna tell her what we're setting her up with tomorrow?
Not yet.
Okay, you're gonna surprise her tomorrow. Okay. Okay, I'll keep it quiet then.
So the part of Ron and I's mission, and part of the mission with this podcast is the idea is we want to bring people into the world, into the duck hunting world, and get them excited about being on ducks and hunting. So whether it's we get you on a deer and you're hunting excited about hunting big game animals, or our Ron and I's passion is truly duck hunting. So we want you on ducks and to be able to hunt. So Josh just happened to be in the right place at the right time. I think I was hunting with my boy and we came out of the blind, and you know, sometimes you have those interactions, and it's, I think Ron and I try to be pretty friendly in the field. It's not just because I think we tend to look at the world as duck hunters or any hunters as a scarcity thing. Ron and I were talking about this today, and so there's a scarcity mindset. If somebody else is on the ducks, then I can't be on the ducks.
Yeah, someone's going to shoot all my ducks.
So Ron and I live in more of the abundance world, right? So we truly believe that there's plenty out there to go around for everybody. So I may only get one or two ducks versus three or four. But I get to go out and have one or two ducks, and somebody else gets to go out and have one or two ducks. And in turn, they're going to go out and buy a hunting license the next year. And they're going to come back and be able to support that. They're going to buy a duck stamp. So we're looking at billions of dollars. I think it's a little bit over $1 billion what the duck stamps have brought into the hunting environment for hunting habitat conservation. So we can bring these people in. I think it's a good thing. And Josh, we had the conversation, and I looked at Josh's ducks, and he wasn't sure what was what and what was quite legal and what wasn't legal. And he was letting ducks pass that were legal ducks to shoot because he just didn't know. And I think we talked about it a little bit, Josh, you know, just that you don't know until somebody teaches you. And what was the one thing you asked me, you talked to me about when we were talking about the ducks and identifying ducks and stuff?
What's your trick and how do you identify?
And you talked to me about how you've wanted to learn, but never had anybody teach you, right? Yeah. And so but it's kind of Ron and I's mission is to teach. And I think, I don't think, sometimes you try not to, as a hunter that goes out, Ron and I are really trying not to dumb it down to make you feel like, hey, you don't know, so what the hell?
Josh got mad at you at one point. He's like, listen, man, I can keep up with you guys. Yeah. You just got to show me the right direction.
You know, and I think...
And Brian's like, I didn't know.
Well, and as duck hunters, I mean, so duck hunting is an expensive sport. I think we all, anybody that's a duck hunter knows it's not a cheap sport to get into. It's not a cheap sport to maintain. So you're going to be out waders. You're going to be out decoys. You're going to be out this and that. Not everybody can afford the price of that, right? So,
and it all depends on how much more you get into it. The price just keeps going up the more serious you get.
So that's part of the approach is if we approach it as, hey, you know, you have to have all this stuff to make it work. Some people, we just price them out of the market. So then you're never going to be able to come back. But if we can say, hey, look, you need a set of decoys. So Josh is out there with a buddy of his and his son and his daughter. They're hunting over no decoys. So I'm like, look, dude, you got to have some decoys out there. You want these ducks coming to you, you got to have some decoys. And Josh, we talked about it a little bit. And he goes, well, every time you guys shoot at ducks, they push the ducks right into us. So we were good with that. So yeah. One of the things that has impressed me with Josh is, you know, Josh has hunted a couple times. He hunted on the boat with us. He's been out in Overton. I've hunted a couple times in Overton this year. He's been out there when I had first draw on a blind. And the first thing Josh asked me, he goes, hey, I'm thinking about taking this blind. It's kind of close to you. Are you okay with that? So I'm never going to tell you no. I'm going to tell you, Josh and I talked about it that day, is I said, well, I might hunt this blind. That would be my preference. If I had second blind, I might take this blind. But that blind would be okay too. So I think when we talk about that, Josh is one of those hunters that's going to come out and say, hey, I don't want to step on your toes. If that's your hole, I'm not going to hunt your hole. If you're in that hole, I'm going to leave you in that hole.
No, but I think that's a big thing about like the premise of this podcast is, you know, how to invite and who to invite and how to keep an invite. And something super cool about inviting a new person out there like Josh or some other people we've invited out is it's almost like you're like, hey, come be on my team. And then when we go out, Josh will you'll be in a bull rush sometimes. I'll be on the pond. Josh will be on another pond and we'll just be calling each other. Hey, how's it going down there? All the ducks aren't flying down here. Okay, that stinks, man. And we're like, hey, they're flying up here. And so you have like people on your team where you call them at a different lake. Like I know we were hunting Sunnyside one weekend, right, without you. Yeah. And then you were down out in Overton. I was like, how you doing down there, Josh? And you're like, that's okay. And I was like, it's okay up here too, you know? And so like it's really cool when you invite people. Now you have those people on your team and like it almost makes your hunting a better experience. Because you have that insight, like it's almost like you're able to scout multiple locations at once because you brought those people into your team, and nobody has that scarcity mindset in your team, and everybody's like, you know what, he's shooting ducks up there this weekend, I'm shooting ducks down here this weekend. We can move around and correlate with each other and kind of get a jump on.
When I think
on the season,
you never know when you ask somebody into your blind and you invite them into your blind or you invite them onto your boat.
I've had very few bad experiences.
No, I'm not talking about the bad experience. Yeah. You never know what it's going to mean to that person that goes out and gets that invite into your blind, whether that changes the way they look at things. So Josh had an experience. So Ron and I are thinking, dude, this was a crappy day to go hunt, man. This was a horrible hunt. I mean, we still had a good time. We always have a good time to go hunt, but the weather was miserable. There weren't a lot of ducks flying. You know,
it was awesome.
It was just, but Josh tells us, so we're kind of coming back and we're going through things, and he goes, hey, just so you guys know, this is my bucket list items. So I've always wanted to hunt this lake on a boat. Well, and so for Ron and I, that's a normal thing, but for Josh that was a different experience because it's something he's always wanted to do.
Why do you think it was enjoyable even though the day was bad, man?
Any bad day, huh? Okay. Than any good day work.
I guess that's true, huh?
Well, and Ron cooked for us that day, so that was our first experience of cooking on the boat.
Oh, man,
was
that awesome? It was pretty good. Huh, man?
We're all fat kids, so, I mean, we like to eat.
That packing sausages was delicious.
Exactly.
So what we did out there, and this is all about one of the things when you invite a new hunter is you want to make them feel comfortable, you know? And it was raining, it was snowing, and me and Brian had talked about it. There's this song by... Was it the Bone Collectors?
Bone Collector series is the album, so yeah. it's a bunch of hunting songs.
It's called Duck Blind, and in that song they say something about eating sausage on white bread.
Sausage on the grill and a piece of white bread.
Yeah, and we and Bryce said, well, that doesn't sound too bad. It was coming down. That snow was just hitting us hard, and my hands were cold, and we're trying to cook in the boat, and I had the grill between my legs, and I didn't have a spatula, and so Brian brought his, which was just a switchblade knife or flip over knife. So I go, Brian, you got a spatula?
It's a SOG knife, which the story on the SOG knife is another one in its own. So Ron and I were out a couple years ago, and we...
Let me finish my story, and then you can tell about how I lose all your stuff. So so I go, you got a spatula? Brian's like, I got a knife. And I was like, good, pass that down here. And so Brian passes the knife down, and... We're flipping it, and all we did is put a piece of sausage with cheese on it and put it on a piece of white bread and passed it all over. And how do those taste, man?
Awesome.
It was like a 5-star meal, wasn't it, man?
Well, I think it was obviously pretty nasty that morning. It was chilly, and you're wet, and the snow's coming down. And so you bite into it, and I think part of it is psychological, too. So it's good, but you bite into it, and the steam's come off, and it's warm. It's something warm. Warm to eat, and it was kind of a nice thing. It's you get out there and it's those little things that can make an experience. It changes it, kind of the atmosphere a little bit.
So. What's your favorite food to eat, Abby, while you're out hunting?
Oysters.
You like those smoked can oysters?
Yeah, they taste delicious.
What, do you have a favorite food, Mary Beth?
Well, normally my dad says no eating it's when you're hunting, it's bad luck.
Is it bad luck?
Eating what you're hunting, yeah.
Eating what you're hunting.
Yeah, I get that.
So you shoot the duck and you bring in the blind, they're like, let's breast this and cook it up right here.
No.
No.
Like, you bring it home and you eat it with
Well, that's a good thing. I don't hunt tacos then.
Right.
Okay. So you don't, well, I'll be able to convert you to the oysters maybe. I don't know.
Well, you don't hunt oysters though. You just, you don't really eat oysters either. Those nasty things. Those smoked oysters. I don't know how you do it.
Stokers are a bunch of weirdos.
I know you are.
Clam chowder and oysters. What do you got?
So there's like, when you're playing a game or something and it's almost like hunting, there's no I in team. So.
Absolutely, and that's the thing is
that's so smart. You're such a smart person.
We can all work together, and so I think part of that is Ron and I have developed some relationships around some of the hunting areas where there's certain people we can call and kind of see how the birds are working in their area, and then we will align our stuff. So Overton is a very busy public lands management area, so you'll get hunters out there, and it's just it can be a nightmare. So sometimes we'll look at we call it the chessboard, see how the chessboard plays out, and we'll try to align ourselves where it's somebody near us or across from us that we
one
know.
One of our teammates.
It's either our teammates or somebody that we're just maybe friendly with that we know is a solid, good hunter, and we'll kind of use that to our advantage. So we'll work the birds back and forth. You know, if we can be on a separate side of the lake and we can push the birds to you or you can push the birds to me. We were talking to Ron. I had the experience. We went out last week, and it was probably the coldest hunt I think Ron and I have been on. It was sub-zero temperatures. And
check the Facebook page out. You can see all the complaints we put up there.
Check us out on Battleboard Duckers on Facebook. But one of the things we were talking about is we met some other hunters up there. And one of the things they were saying is hunting another area that Ron and I have been looking at trying to hunt. And they basically said if you sit on two sides of the area – that you'll push the birds back and forth all day long. So if you can now team up with another boat to go to those two areas, you're going to have a lot greater chance of success.
You know what? I think like that all comes from, what's a nice way of putting it? When you're out hunting, you don't got to be mean to each other. Even like new hunters, sometimes they don't know they're blowing your ducks off your hole by shooting too high. And so it goes a long way to not be a douchebag, you know? And just be nice to people and start that conversation, and you could educate in nice ways instead of saying, well, stop being a sky blaster. You could say, man, I really like when the ducks decoy, man. So like, we'll wait for them to get in our spread and then we'll shoot them, you know, and then people listen, man. You don't have to be mean about it. We're all on the same team. And, you know, it's better to have friends than enemies when you're out hunting because you never know when Brian's going to shoot you. So.
Yeah, absolutely. I've tried to shoot Ron a couple times this year. It just hasn't worked very well.
I'm too fast.
Yeah. He's like lightning, like grease lightning. And I mean more grease than lightning, but.
You call me? Yeah, you're right. You're right. Josh, let me ask you a question, man. Why, when this weirdo with the beard looking like who's that guy on the duck show? What's that guy's name? Duck Dynasty.
Don't call me Uncle Si. We'll be good.
This Uncle Si, Duck Dynasty guy. Why did his invite? Were you like, oh yeah, I'll go ahead and try that? What made you want to go out with him?
Yeah, I'll do something stupid.
Come on, somebody looks like that. That's gotta be fun.
It's all the looks, huh? Okay.
Well, you know, I think that's one of the things Ron and I really, really strive to do is we try to treat people with respect and try to treat people well. This last weekend that we were on, we talked to some people, and one of the things that caught me that I don't know if it caught you the way it caught me is they said, you guys are the first duck hunters we've ever talked to that were actually decent to deal with, which is sad because
there's a lot of us, man.
We have a sport that we could really do good things with the sport. We can do a lot for conservation. The more we do for conservation, the better our sport's going to be. But we got to go out there and be jerks to everybody. And if we out there to be jerks, it's not going to help anybody.
It's one thing that's deterred me from getting into duck hunting. Anybody I've ever talked to, it's been a hardcore duck hunter. They're a douche. They're not good people.
Well, Ron and I try to, we go hard. I mean, you know that, Josh, at this point. I mean, Ron and I will go hard, but man, it's about trying to make it enjoyable for people. I don't want people to come out once and be so turned off to hunting, or go out and they ask a question because they really want to know. And one of the things that struck me about Josh is he really wanted to know. He was asking the question not because I just want to know and you give me the answer and then I move on. He wanted the question because he wanted to learn. And so when you have those people, if we feed that
change the culture,
search for knowledge, we change that culture a little bit, but if they feel welcome in that duck hunting community, they're going to come back to that duck hunting community. And the hope is that we get these new hunters in and they get the passion for duck hunting. And then it's not just a passion for duck hunting. If we have a million duck hunters come out and hunting ducks, it's going to hurt. I'm not going to lie to you. It's going to hurt duck hunting for everybody. But if we get 750,000 of those guys that are just as passionate about the conservation side, so they have the ability to hunt in the future, now we just made that to where we can support 5 million duck hunters.
No, I'm not going to lie. My thought behind Vegas and bringing new duck hunters in Vegas, there's not many ducks out here in the desert, and that's normal. But Vegas is Nevada is a very transient state. And so you're going to bring these new hunters in. You're going to teach them how to hunt. You're going to give them the passion. You're going to teach them a culture where they're friendly to everybody. And then what happens with most people in Vegas?
They move out. But guess what doesn't move? That passion. $25 that they just put into that duck stamp. They're going to put in a duck stamp next year and the next year and the next year.
And the culture they're going to bring to the next place.
Exactly.
You know?
And so it really is, I think we need to see it as duck hunters as bringing a legacy, right? So do you want to leave duck hunting better than you found it, or you just want to go out and harvest ducks? If you just want to go out and harvest ducks, you're not doing anybody any favors.
Yeah, I mean, you could raise them in your yard and throw them in the grass, shoot them in the yard.
So hunting is a sport, but it's not for fun. You're actually, you're basically helping the environment. So it's not very nice to just hunt them for fun.
No, and that's true. And I think,
right? This is all about your passion. I mean, it is fun. Do you have fun when you're out?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but your reasons behind it is you're doing it to have time with your dad, right? You're doing it to harvest an animal and eat it, right? And you're doing it to put money back into conservation to, like, have more ducks for next year, right?
Basically.
Okay, cool.
So the one thing that I was listening to another podcast the other day, because I always like to have more knowledge. So I listen to as much as I can and try to learn as much as I can. One of the things we're talking about was actually the federal duck stamp program. And a lot of people don't realize about the federal duck stamp program is, you know, just how much money it gives back, right? So since the inception of the program, the amount of management, I think it was 6 million acres of land has been dedicated just to waterfowl. On top of that, there was a discussion about the new duck stamps, and a lot of people don't know this, is a requirement. So the duck stamp art program has been around since the 30s, I think, and you submit your art, and if you get chosen, that's the art on the duck stamp. People collect it. They said
I think those duck stamps are beautiful.
1.5 million duck stamps, I think they said, were sold last year. 500,000 of those duck stamps were not to hunters, or were second stamps to hunters.
Really?
Because they were collecting them. So that 500,000 duck stamps is going strictly, they're not even hunting. They're just buying them because they like the program, right? Well, what was amazing about it is this year, they implemented a new program. So if you look at your duck stamp this year, on a piece of reed is hanging a lanyard with a duck call. Now, why would there be a lanyard with a duck call on it? Because it's mandatory now to submit your artwork that has to have a hunting aspect associated with it. And the reason they did that is because...
Throw a picture of that up on the...
Yeah, we can throw a picture of that up. The reason they do that is because they want to remind people that a majority of the conservation money is coming from the hunting population.
Yeah, I want you to throw a picture on Facebook with that and circle it, because I didn't know that either. That's interesting.
Man. I was listening to Meat Eater the other night on the way home, and they were talking about that federal duck stamp program.
I love Steve Rinell, man.
And Steve Rinell's another one. He gives back to that program. And I think as we go forward with that, Ron and I are part of a couple different clubs that's conservation is their goal. And I think as we get new duck hunters in, what does the best for the duck population is conservation. And so Ducks Unlimited has done really well with increasing habitat. But if you look at what the population was back in the 70s versus what it is today for ducks, it's actually growing. I mean, we're having more ducks come in. And this year has been, I think in Overton, it's probably been the best year that Ron and I have seen in Overton. It's been a
really good year.
It's been a really good year for ducks. And, you know, we all get frustrated with skybusters. And Josh, I must have said that
to him. I just call them conservationists, man, because if they shoot high, no one else can shoot them. So it's Texas.
Well, and Josh and I talked to
him. Conservationists.
I probably told Josh that 20 times the first time I talked to him. Just don't shoot high. But if we think about it, those guys are putting a lot of money back into hunting. Because every round they shoot off, there's an excise tax on that round, right? So inadvertently, they're putting a bunch of money back into that hunting
population. Oh, man, one of my favorite stories, a guy down at the WMA was telling me, he said he was in a blind, and he heard these guys all morning, man. And he caught him walking out. He goes, how many did you guys get? They go, we got one. He's like, you got one? How many did you shoot? They go, a case. He's like, a box? They go, no, a case. We shot a case. How many boxes are in a case? There's like 10 boxes in a case. There's 25 shells in a box. That group of guys in a blind went through 250 shells in a morning. That is incredible.
And got one duck. But the thing is that they don't know any better, right? So if you can't get mad at somebody if you're not willing to step outside your comfort zone and try to teach them a little bit. Yeah. Now, not everybody's teachable. Josh has been pretty gracious with just kind of listening sometimes and kind of getting a lecture. And it's not meant to be negative towards you, Josh. We don't know how anybody hunts. And so what we're trying to do is I'm trying to set you up for success. And I know your partner was like, does he know where we work? And I'm like, but not everybody can afford to go out and buy a brand new pair of waders and a dozen decoys and a duck call and all the stuff that's associated with it. Ron and I are pretty adamant. I will tell you that the duck hunt we went on solidified the best purchase that Ron and I ever made was a wader jacket. That was 100%, that hunt solidified that just because we were dry and we were warm.
Yeah, that last one we went on last Saturday, you said you looked at my wader jacket at one point, there's icicles coming off.
There was literally icicles dripping off this wader jacket. We sent the dog out after a duck, and it was so cold as the dog was coming out of the water, you could actually watch the ice form on the dog, on his fur. My beard was completely frozen solid. So we've always said, you know, if you don't like being miserable, you don't like being a duck hunter. But your gear can really go a long ways to making it a comfortable hunt. Now, you don't have to spend a ton of money on gear. I just bought a new set of waders. I was going to buy a new set of... Our standard is we go to Sportsman's every year. We buy a new set of waders for $100 on Black Friday.
I go to Sportsman's because they support conservation.
And they do support conservation. And we love Sportsman's. We give Sportsman's a lot of money. This year, I'm like, you know, I'm going to see what's on eBay for waders. Well, I ended up buying a more expensive pair of waders that somebody had used for a season that are in perfect condition, almost no wear on them at all, but I got them for $89. I would have paid $400 for them if I'd have bought them somewhere else. And I wore them on this hunt, and I told Ron, I'm like, man, at some point it was below zero, and I was sweating in my waders. Yeah. And so you don't have to go out and break the bank to...
You can find deals.
You can find deals.
If you get into duck hunting in the duck season, you're not going to find the deals, but on the off season... People sell their old decoys.
And even if you have to start out with, you know, you buy a pair of PVC waders and you put a bunch of underlayers under, and that's what you can afford to hunt, by all means, buy a pair of PVC waders and make it work.
Or do you just do it to see if you like it first? You know, you get out there with the cheap waders and you see if you like it. Because that's what Josh was doing. He's like, no one's going to teach me. I'm a pit bull. I'm going to go try to figure it out. I don't care what y'all think. And then luckily he got hooked up with Brian. But... Yeah, but I think it's all about trying.
Well, Ron and I—that's how we learned. Yeah. It was the school of hard knocks, right?
So you go out flambeau decoys,
and I will tell you, they're not the best decoy on the market, but they're better than having nothing in the hole. So, yeah.
Sportsman's. I just bought a box of them. They've got sets of six for $40. They've got singles. They've got all kinds of them to get you out there and get you working.
Were those flambeaux, though?
They're probably Hidgens, I bet.
Yeah, you got nice Hidgens, man.
I think they were Hidgens. And
you
and,
don't know the pain of flambeaux.
But
no, you do. You do. I let you have my old decoys for a few hunts. You saw those.
Yeah.
They look like ugly sticks.
And I think we can hunt. We can hunt.
They work, though, yeah.
If you have a passion, you can make it work. I mean, you don't have to have a dog and a boat and all that other stuff to go hunting. Now, it's nice. I would much rather be out on the boat hunting. Just feels a much more comfortable hunt.
Or having a dog is a big
deal,
too.
The dog is awesome. I mean, being out and hunting with a dog is just, you let the dog do his work, right?
Well, you have a friend, at least, you know?
And you do have a friend.
Because I'm not your friend.
For me, I enjoy watching the dog work. So there's a different gear. The dog's looking for the duck, He's kind of swimming around. As soon as he sees that duck, he keys in on it. He shifts into another gear, and he's off to work.
Brian only likes the dog because that's the only one that's nice to him out there on the boat.
Well, that's the only one that'll be my friend, and I got to tie a pork chop around my neck to get that to happen. But, you know.
That'd be nice to the dog. The dog brings him his birds.
Exactly. But I think if there's one thing we can ask other hunters, it's just be good to somebody that it's their first time. If they ask you a question, don't be a jerk about it. Just answer that question. Give them the knowledge that you have. You didn't get that knowledge because you just happened upon it. You got that knowledge because somebody was willing to teach you.
You might have worked for it.
Well, and you do work. Sometimes you do work for it, but a lot of duck hunters have had a dad or an uncle or a grandpa that's taken them out and taught them the ropes.
Go ahead, Josh.
One thing I can say is modesty goes a long ways.
Yeah.
Don't be afraid to ask. Don't be afraid to talk to the guy that you know was successful.
That's true, right? And in the hunting community, there's a lot of type A personalities, alphas, right? And you don't want to go like swallow your pride and be like, well, what did you do? You know?
No problem with it. That's the way you learn.
One thing I started out, I had a few mentors that were really good to me, but I learned a lot on my own through the School of Hard Knocks, and that's something I don't want other hunters to do, because I'd be out there like getting hypothermic. I fell in holes and almost drowned. I tipped kayaks, you know, and we went through a lot of dangerous situations that I wouldn't have had to if I had someone that, like, I could call up and be like, hey, should I go out here? And be like, go out here, but there's a channel that runs right through the middle, so don't step off that channel.
Don't sink your boat.
I remember one time I was out with my kid, and it was just me and my kid, and I had this old green kayak, and we shot a duck. I went to get it, and I flipped that kayak, and I went in the hole. I said, Mitchell, call mom to come back and pick us up because we were up camping at Sunnyside. And then I stepped off into the canal and went under, you know, and that was all in one hunt. So, it's so important to go out with experienced people to new duck hunting areas, because duck hunting can be deadly.
It's going to be a dangerous sport. I mean, you're dealing with firearms. You're hunting in cold weather. You're in water.
Tell about your kid's experience, what he learned that we learned he was out on Nesbitt.
So we went out, we were hunting a pond, and man, the ducks weren't working the way we would like them to, and there were ducks all the way on the other side of the lake.
Puddling up.
So my kid's dumb enough that we could tell him, hey, get on a kayak, go chase some ducks.
Go jump them ducks.
So he had a gun with him, and he's kayaking, and he got a shot off on some ducks, and you know, kind of pushed him a little bit. Didn't really push him to us, but he's trying. He was young. He's 15, 16 at the time. Mm-hmm. But he's paddling, and something got caught up in his gun, and his gun went off. And mm-hmm. So it scared him. So it's just one of those things where we have to be cognizant of what we're doing. We have to be cognizant of having new hunters in our blinds. So it's one of the risks we take.
Well, and just being a new hunter, too, and realizing you're going to make mistakes, and being around older and more experienced hunters will say, hey, listen, make sure your gun's on safety when you start paddling.
Yeah, or, I mean, one of the big things Ron and I are big about is cover. So one of the hardest things, I think, for a new duck hunter is not looking at ducks, right? So the desire is the duck's coming overhead, and you're like, oh, there's a duck coming, and he's off about 3 o'clock, right?
What does everybody do? Every new hunter that sees the duck, what
do they do with their finger? Duck, right?
They point at it, too. They'll throw their finger up and say, it's right there.
Or they'll have their gun out of the blind, waving the gun around, waiting for this duck to come in, right? So it's one of the things that we need to have these conversations before we get out in the duck blind and tell them why. Don't just yell at them. Say, dude, quit looking at a duck. Could be an idiot.
Go and tell them what I do. What do I do to you when someone's messing up?
So we were literally out hunting an area, and it was a really crappy morning, and we shouldn't have even been hunting. We had some new hunters with us, but the people that were like next to us, probably a couple hundred yards up, they were close enough to where they were peppering us. They were shooting at stuff that was 600 yards high. I'm not kidding you. First pass on a duck. As soon as they saw a duck, they were lighting off on it. And Brian and Ron screams, "Brian, that's too high.
Stop shooting."
And I looked at him, I'm like, I didn't even, and I just stopped. I knew what he was doing. So he's screaming at the top of his lungs at me to tell them to quit shooting high. And so there's ways to go about it. So Ron and I, we'll call each other out. Well, we're not doing anything wrong. Because
I stole that from Dr. Duck, yeah, that podcast.
And it, aggressive, very, very passive.
But
I'll be like, Brian, stop pointing the ducks. He'll be like, shut up, man. You know I'm not doing that.
But it gets the other person thinking, hey, oh, maybe I'm doing that. And so it just gets them thinking without making them feel like, hey, you're an idiot, quit pointing at the ducks. But it's the conversation we have before we get in the duck blind, number one. It's having the conversation so we're comfortable. It was the first time I'd ever been out hunting with you on a boat with you. I don't know how you do with a gun. I don't know how safe you are. I don't know any of that stuff. Because I will tell you, I have family members that would go out hunting, deer hunting, and they'd be drunk by noon. So I don't hunt with people like that. So it's just get a comfort level with the people that are in your blind. You know, invite somebody in your blind. It doesn't hurt you. I mean, if a guy was skybusting the weekend before and you get him into the blind and you're like, whoa, those are too high. And you show him that it's an effective way to hunt. And now you've harvested more birds than he's ever harvested before. He's going to go back in that blind the next weekend and he's going to wait for those ducks to work a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, and it's being courteous to
other hunters. How do you invite people, Brian? What's your tactic on getting new people out with you?
You know,
send them a text that says, you want to do something
stupid. Send them a text say, hey, you want to do something stupid? Yeah. I got an open spot in my boat. Yeah. I think it's, man, that's a tough situation. So you got a guy that's hunting and he's an issue, right? Mm-hmm. I know we talked to a game warden at one point that his technique is if guys are a problem, he goes and says, hey, there's this class. You guys ought to really look into going to this class.
Yeah.
And for us, I think it's, hey, man, how many birds you get? Oh, you know, I only got one or two. I'm like, well, hey, you know, those birds that are working are too high. If you let them work a little bit longer, they'll get in your blind. But hey, give me your number. We'll get you in a blind with us sometime and let you hunt with us. And I think that invitation sometimes is what that guy's looking for. He wants the knowledge, but he doesn't want to be the guy that says, I don't know what the hell I'm doing.
He's not going to be the guy that's going to come and say, hey, will you take me? No. Yeah, I think it's just the invite. It's not that hard. If you have a guy I work with is like, man, I've always wanted to go hunt. My first response is, let's go. When do you want to go? And like, it's just the invite. You'll get people out hunting that have never been before. You're going to get them passionate. Or if a guy's like, man, I still don't know what I'm doing, be like, why don't you jump in with me? When do you want to go? You know, it's just the when do you want to go? And a lot of people are just looking for that invite. It's not that hard. And I think it's really important with non-hunters. Because if someone has that curiosity and their drive, I mean, there's some guys that want to sit in front of the TV and play Xbox, you know. And there's other guys, they're out hiking and off-roading. And those are people that want to be hunters. They just don't know it yet.
Well, Ron and I had an experience. There was a guy that is in a club. We'll interview. We'll have a sit-down with him a little bit later. But he's in another club. And Ron had invited him into our blind. And he's like, I'm not going to hunt. People hunt. People shoot over my dogs. I'm just not going to do it. I won't ever duck hunt again. And so Ron and I started the podcast, and we started talking about the take one, teach one principle and getting people excited about duck hunting. He listened to our podcast because we were just friends from doing some other stuff, and he listened to our podcast.
He's a good guy.
As soon as he was done, he called Ron up and said, hey, I want to get in the blind with you guys. I want to hunt with you guys. We took him out hunting. And man, he wants to be back in the blind with us now. So it's really about, you have to portray a positive image of the sport. And you've got to be responsible. You've got to be good. I mean, his favorite thing, duck hunt, was watching the dog work. Because that's his passion.
He loves them dogs, man.
And so when we can bring people out, we can, for Ron, I think it's for Ron, we want you to feel like family. We want you to feel like you're welcome in our blind. Josh, I don't know how many text messages I've sent Josh since we met saying, hey, winter jackets are on sale. Here's a link to the winter jacket. Hey, Black Friday's coming. Waiters are going to be on sale. You know, here's some waiters on sale. So it's those things that you want to drive that passion. And the only way to drive that passion is have passion yourself and be good to people to where they feel welcome to come back with you some other time.
Just invite them out.
What's up, Mary Beth?
So it's kind of like when you have a friend and you want to go over to their house, but my mom and dad always taught me never to invite yourself.
That's that thing. Yeah, you don't want to invite yourself.
Because your dad's a manly man. He's like, I'm not going to invite myself.
But that's the way we talk, to be polite, right? So it's not, I'm not going to impose myself on somebody else. But so it's our job as mentors and try to be mentors to impose yourself into their world to where they feel welcome in your world, right? So it's not.
I don't think Josh or would you ever ask, be like, can I jump in with you guys?
No. Don't think anybody ever would.
Yeah.
If they're a decent human being, they wouldn't impose, like you just said. But you showed the hospitality and took the first step, and that's awesome.
What I want to drive, to be honest with you, right?
Now, Josh, what do you think, Josh? Do you think in the future you might invite somebody out to just jump in the blind with you?
Definitely. It showed me that what's your whole point of what you guys are trying to do. It showed me that you can have a different outlook. You can invite somebody, and it's not going to go south.
Well, and it for me, I mean,
you don't know.
I'm looking.
You just don't invite them back.
Yeah. So when I came up on Josh, it was just, you have a friendly conversation. Sometimes you're walking out of the blind, somebody's like, hey, how'd you do? I did okay. We're doing okay too. So I had that conversation, like, how many you got? And then, so the follow-up question sometimes is the most important one. So if I would have said, hey, how many you got? And he goes, well, I got three. I'm like, oh, good job. And I would have walked off. That would have been the end of the conversation. But it was, how many you got? I got three. I'm like, well, what do you got? And then the answer was, well, I don't know. Can you come look at them for me? And so that showed me he had the desire to learn.
He showed you that he's lucky too.
He wanted.
What did he shoot his first day out there? Did he shoot a blue wing out there?
He did shoot a blue wing, which is almost
lucky freaking dog, man.
I mean, it's almost it doesn't happen out here. So if you get a cinnamon, that's pretty good. So I'm looking at my man. Is it a blue wing or a cinnamon? I'm looking at it a little closer. I'm like, I'm pretty sure that was a blue wing. And so, you know, it's one of those things where I'm sitting here watching a guy. Not only did he ask for help, in front of one of his buddies that was hunting with him. He asked for help in front of his kids. And for a man in front of his kids to ask for help, I mean, that not only does it prove the character of that man, but it proves that, man, that kid's teaching his kid, that man's teaching his kids right.
Yeah, he wants to do what's right by
so, the so law he's, and he's stuff. Teaching his kids it's okay to ask for help with things. And I think that one of the things I respected about Josh, and so for when we had an open spot on the boat, and Ron's like, hey, why don't you invite that guy out hunting? Ron didn't know this guy.
That doesn't say much, dude. I'll invite anybody.
Yeah, Ron will invite anybody. But one of the things that's funny is, so Ron's wife is, we have a company trying to bring a big solar project out here that's going to kind of destroy our hunting habitat for part of it, and then just kind of make some issues for our whole
talk about that a little bit, man. Town. Where are they putting that stupid solar?
So we have a mesa out behind us. So we're in Logandale, and there's more of a mesa. They want to put a 9,000-acre solar facility. It's going to be the biggest in the United States.
Right in the freaking flyway.
Right in the flyway. It's going to push the ducks off the water. Not only that,
fry the ducks.
It's going to create the lake effect. They're going to be trying to fly into the panels and land. Well, unbeknownst to me, Josh's wife just happened to be one of the two people that was spearheading an effort to kind of head this off. And so I'd gone to a meeting a couple days before, and Josh walked out of the meeting, and he asked what my name was. He goes, hey, do you have any connection with Burris Scopes? I'm like, no, if I had connection with Burris Scopes, I wouldn't be shooting a Vortex. So, you know, that was the first interaction. And then he'd seen me checking in that morning, on that Friday morning, and said, man, I know you from somewhere, and this connection didn't get made. And we were having a conversation later in the day, and that's kind of came full circle or back around to that moment. But so his wife's doing a good thing for our community, and in turn, you know, we just happen to be in the same place at the same time. I think those good deeds and those doing good things for people, karma's a great thing.
You freaking hit,
unless you're a jerk, then karma's gonna be a bad day.
Yeah, man, I agree with you. No, I think just getting people out and inviting people, and it makes a big deal. It's going to really help our thing. One last story before we end this. Josh was on the boat, and this is the last story about Josh. I know we've talked about him a lot. I called him the wrong name the whole day. He still liked me.
Dude,
what did I call you? How many times did I call you?
I called four different names, I think.
Call it Jared, Jamie, George, Jason. Jim, Jason.
Anything started with a J, he answered to. So he's okay. But we're coming through this little tiny channel. I'm not a small guy. Brian's not a small guy. Josh isn't a small guy. Neither is Jared. Those were all the people in the boat. All of a sudden, that front end went under, and we start almost sinking that boat, and Brian starts hollering, "Get to the back of the boat! Get to the back of the boat!" Anyway, so we run all the way back there. The front end pops up, and we got lucky because we were in the middle of nowhere. I pooped my pants a little bit, but we got lucky. And so we bilge it out, and Josh goes, "You know what I'm going to do? I'm just going to stand on the back of these pontoons the whole day so we don't put that front end under." And so I have a big mud motor. I steered that thing between Josh's legs all day while he stood up on the boat. It was awesome. We didn't go under anymore, though.
No, and I think it was...
So the point of that story is if you're the person invited out, be like Josh. Be humble. Be willing to listen. And be the hardest working person out there, just standing on the back of the boat while you're, what, some yahoo's driving a big old propeller through your legs all day.
No, I think that's the thing, is it's be somebody that people want to take out a second time. And I think Josh was that for us. I mean, he kind of fit in. So Ron and I get on the boat, and, you know, we're with our buddy Jared that, mm-hmm. man, Jared will have on the podcast here hopefully soon. But, man, we're after each other all day long. It doesn't stop. Well, Josh gets on the boat, and it's not going to stop with Josh either. He's going to be right in the mix. So, I mean, Ron's calling him the wrong name all day long. And I mean, he falls in the water. We make fun of him for falling in the water. I mean, then Ron fills his waders up with water. He pokes holes in his waders so he's going to sink. I mean, but Josh was just, he never missed a beat, and he just was one of the guys and get in there. And, man, I appreciated you being on our boat with you. And I appreciate you trusting us enough to go 3 hours outside of your house and be like, "Hey, let's do something stupid." And you learned what something stupid meant. So
you got really stupid that day.
And I think for Ron, I think it just built another relationship that we can all kind of benefit from long term. So
Josh is taking people too. Like he's taking Marybeth out tomorrow. He's taking, how old is your son?
12.
So you got two kids, you know, and so he's teaching his kids, and those kids, like, teaching kids really grows that hunting tree, you know. And duck hunting is so good for kids, man.
It is. It's something you can shoot. You can just shoot more than once.
Well, my brother, he's kind of picky about meat, and I'm like, meat, but liver is just not my thing. Liver is like...
Liver's not meat. Liver's disgusting.
Yeah. Liver is a part of body, but organs.
So you love duck meat then?
I love
it. What's your favorite way to cook it?
My mom, she kind of cuts it up and puts it into a frying pan with some oil.
Uh-huh.
And then she puts a little bit of seasoning on them. I don't know what kind of seasoning, but, and then I bite into it.
You did Korean.
Is like that what it is?
Duck, right?
So here's what we're going to do. We're going to call it Marybeth's duck recipe. You send it over to us. We'll put it on our Facebook page.
Okay.
So, and we're going to need a picture of it all cooked up, looking delicious.
So I've got one thing for Josh. So you know, we all shoot ducks, and Josh, you know, he's kind of new to harvesting ducks. And so Josh is like, "I want a tri-coot." And
I mean, you don't want to do it once, man.
You don't want to try coot, Josh. So, Josh, what was your coot experience?
It tastes like liver.
I told him. And so, but you got to have it. I mean, I guess it's worth it to try it one time. My boy tried it. We made him. My rule is if you shoot it, you eat it.
This is my favorite story.
And so, my wife decided versus just eating straight coot, because it's going to be nasty, she would make some chicken soup. And she would cut the coot up and put it in chicken soup.
Man.
So we had chicken and we had coot in this soup. And so we're eating this chicken soup, and Cody gets a piece of coot, and he goes, man, it tastes just like chicken. And I'm like, boy, I don't know what the hell kind of chicken you've been eating, but you've been doing it wrong. So for me, it was as soon as I hit it hit my mouth.
Like, you go get tested cute. For COVID.
Yeah, no,
you
don't
like, you be like, you need to get tested.
You got COVID. You got the COVID, brother. What's up, Mary Beth?
So I tasted coot. I'm like, oh, that tastes like garbage.
it's pretty bad. Now, my boys from the south, I know some of you really enjoy coot and more power to you. I just can't do it,
man.
I can't do it. So, well. Okay. Josh, I think for us, I think Ron and I appreciated you being in the boat with us. We appreciate you hunting with us. And man, we hope that it was a good experience. And you know, I know
I'm happy you invited him, Brian. He's a good guy.
He is. And
Jake is an awesome guy.
Jake.
Or Joseph. Jake or whatever he's going by nowadays.
Or whatever it is. Just don't call him late for dinner, I guess. So, but no.
I'll be there when dinner's ready.
But we appreciate you and we appreciate you taking the kids out and getting them on in that hunting environment. And you have another friend that you take out quite a bit. It's a buddy of yours. And the only way I would ask is that, man, you just keep that tradition. If there's somebody that you can teach along the way, man, do whatever you can to make it better. And man, other than that, I think
we're good. We talked for a long time. I think we're good. Wrap it up.
So if you can remember, if you're going out this weekend, make sure you, if you can take somebody and get them out in the duck blind. If you're going to take them, teach them and give them a skill that they can use forever. And then no matter what, always hunt hard.
Yeah, go hard. And don't be afraid to invite.
Invite.
Okay. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, guys.